Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
Welcome everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Currie. I'm your presenter for this session of Senior Focus, and this is the session that's sponsored by Auckland Grey Power. And at this stage, I'm wanting just to review a little bit about Grey Power's national policies. I quite often get asked questions about this, and I think it's really important. We've got a plank, a main core policy around aged care. And yesterday I listened to Heather Du Plessis-Allen interviewing a young woman who's a care worker in Australia and who's been in the media and on Facebook talking about her average day and what she actually does. And you might think, well, hang on a minute, what's going on here? At the rock bottom, yes, her day was frenetic, and what she had to do with each client, that she had 8 minutes to do everything, get them out of bed using a hoist, get them dressed, take them in the shower, do their teeth, get them ready for breakfast and get them wheeled out to breakfast. 8 minutes for all of that. And, you know, she listed off how many clients she had to do before breakfast and then what she had to do after that. And it was just an absolute marathon and physically, you know, hugely taxing. So the rock bottom here is that, yes, the wages for New Zealand care workers have risen in recent times, and that's been partly due to a very concerted campaign by unions, by E2, and also by groups like Grey Power lobbying for the living wage and for it in the aged care sector in particular. But what remains is the chronic underfunding of the whole sector. And Grey Power's had a very strong policy around aged care, the central policy, which is to have an aged care commissioner. And this is as a deterrent to stopping elder abuse. And people think that they're going to jail because of their activities, with the way in which they are interacting with older people and their family in particular, using funds inappropriately, trying to shuffle somebody out of their property and so on. This is a really serious matter that is on the increase, and it's something that needs a careful watchdog that has teeth, that can actually take claims through the court, because families can't always afford to take other family members through the court. So it's too shameful, too difficult. But if there's an independent government-funded agency that looks into cases, that's a different matter. And when we've seen with what's happening with the vulnerable children and how effective a child commissioner is at spotlighting what's going on and delivering quality advice to the government, we think there's a really strong need for an equivalent for seniors. But an aged care commissioner, if that person was to exist right now and was resourced, it's undoubtedly one of the key jobs that would come up straight away on the table would be to highlight to government the underfunding of the sector and how underfunding of actual buildings and beds and underfunding of the enterprise so that it can be attractive to bring in enough workers that stay in a career structure and so on. So there's quite a few issues there that underpin why these people are working just so frenetically, and just how intense their workloads are and just what they're expected to do and how many decisions they have to make that are quite skilled decisions. They can't just be fulfilled by somebody stepping off the street. They need training. And so all of these issues really need to be addressed, and having an aged care commissioner will make a difference because it will be that independent voice, that evidence-based voice. And it will be a direct voice to the government and to cabinet. So that is something that won't go away in a hurry. It's something that both Labor and the Greens agreed to before they got into power, and they were unanimous. And I have mentioned before on the program how it was Labor and the Greens, together with Grey Power, who set up these meetings up and down the country at which hundreds of seniors came along and heard what we need an aged care commissioner for, what that person would do and how that person needed to be resourced. They can't just be a sort of wise man in the sky, they actually, or a wise woman, they actually have to have staff underneath them that can do the investigative donkey work, prepare reports and so on. And so it has to be an office of the commissioner with a commissioner. And that's what is going to stay as core part of Grey Power policy, because we aren't going away, and that is something that people really need to understand and appreciate why it's so central. And often because aged care is out of sight, out of mind, unless you have someone in care, you don't really know what the issues are necessarily. It's something that when someone like Heather DePlessis-Allen picks it up and highlights it on the drive show, it's good. It's an opportunity for us to get more active and do more about it. So if you are talking to any MPs, casually, socially, we have the opportunity to raise this matter. You want to phone your local MP, you want to put pen to paper, you know, we would encourage you to do this, because the more energy comes in, when an MP gets 11 letters in a week, they sit up. When they get 50, they really start to raise the issue in circles with other MPs and so on. And so if two or three MPs get a barrage of letters, you can be sure that it is something that the political temperature rises and notice is taken. So I do invite you, if you think about it, you might not need this care, but one day you might. And someone in your own family may be in care, and you may have seen some of the issues. However you do it, whatever experience you draw on, there's plenty of stuff that we have. We've got stuff on the website, and I am sure that even short, pithy statements can be very effective. You don't have to be doing a policy tome. Now, something that's very much in the news at the moment is the zero carbon bill, and a lot of people won't be necessarily aware that Grey Power Federation at the national level actually did submit on this bill. There was an article in the latest Grey Power newsletter, and your library will have a copy of that. If you don't have a copy and you're listening and you're not a member, and have a look in your local library, because they are delivered there when they come out four times a year. So the intermediate goals that were supported were because of recognising the impact of emissions and greenhouse gases, what effects these were going to have on climate change and on the quality of life and on where it's going to be safe for people to live. And looking at, just for seniors alone, the thought of having to shift house because they're living too close to the sea level and won't be able to cope with the sea level rising and high spring tides and waves that come in from tsunamis and so on. There's just so many issues that spring to mind. But essentially, in order to cope with the rising temperature and the carbon emissions and the related sea level rising and so on, it's really important that we actually do something about our own carbon levels individually, as well as the government doing something. So by declaring a state of emergency, I guess, this actually means more immediacy around setting plans, having goals, having targets, and doing something that's stepped up. So we don't just wait for 2040 or 2050. We're actually working towards 2025 and what can be achieved. Where can we get the greatest impact? And this conversation around declaring a state of emergency is something that has come up with local councils, and I know that this was recommended by a number of local boards in Auckland, and the governing body was happy to pass that at a committee meeting recently. So it's possible that the government will bring this in. I mean, there is talk about that. I heard yesterday. I haven't been listening today, so I don't really know how that's gone. But it's a watch this space because of the intensity with which people are recognising that you can't say it's business as usual. So at the local government conference, which I attended in Wellington a couple of weeks ago, it was uppermost It was being presented by a number of provocative speakers as the issue of our time. And everybody, really, from Federated Farmers right through to various MPs, Jackie Deans from the South Island, then former MPs like the Honourable Tariana Turia, they were all adamant that, yes, we needed to change and, yes, we needed something done. And it needed to be done in unity. There needed to be people coming together, people collaborating. It was no use being a top-down thing that was imposed on people. It needed to come stimulated from the grassroots, and it required a community collective action. And it's that I guess, has been the subject of Dave Cull's discussion paper, Local Government New Zealand, headed by Dave Cull, the Mayor of Dunedin. That discussion paper that's out now until December actually focuses on the fact that we have power concentrated in the Parliament, that we have decision-making at 90% of all decisions that impact on our lives and communities are made at the parliamentary level rather than the local level. And the funding is at that level. So when funding is devolved and decisions are devolved from the Parliament, it's very far removed from the daily experience of what makes a difference on the ground. And in countries that are coping better with poverty and housing issues and ageing populations and all sorts of other issues that we talk about on this program, other democracies are doing it closer to the grassroots. So the Parliament devolves more of the funding. And when you think our council has to do most of what it does on rates, which is totally inadequate for funding things like the Central Rail Loop, but it has also only got limited capacity to raise funds through charges. And some of those charges fall on residents. And that means inequalities. It means some people are shut out from participating because of those charges. And that doesn't seem to be very sensible. That just adds to a sense of not belonging rather than inclusiveness. So what's the picture that the local government are presenting is that around between 40 and 60% of funding and decision making is at the local level in Germany, Switzerland, Denmark, Norway, Holland, France, Japan, you know, many countries have devolved funding and decision making to the local level for health, for housing. And they have long term housing, they have long term tenure, they don't have the 90-day eviction situation that we have here. And that's more suitable for the kind of renting situation that we're facing here. Most of our policy towards income support in old age is around the super, around the income supplement, housing supplement for people who rent. But that's all predicated on 80% of seniors owning their own home. What we are facing is not only a rapid increase in the numbers of older people, and as I've said many times, it's 25% will be over 65 within 10 years. So it's quite a rapid leap up from around the 16% that we have at the moment in our urban areas. Not only are we facing that, but we're also facing the situation where we've got people who don't own their own homes, and that level of home ownership is dropping so rapidly, or conversely you could say the seniors that rent, the numbers are rising so rapidly, that 60% of seniors will be renting within 20 years. And so you can say, right, we're in a time where we're moving up from 20%, which was the norm about 5-6 years ago. That's moved up. It's more like 24 or 26% in a lot of areas. And then if you go further afield again, you're heading towards 30. So it's clearly, you know, we should be looking at predicating policies around a 30% mark, because that's rapidly where we're heading. And by the time policies get enacted, it will be just about that level. So in terms of house building and neighbourhood planning and that sort of thing, we have to plan for people renting. We have to look at what does that mean in terms of how well connected they are to neighbourhoods, and whether the housing stock is adequate for them, that whether the heating level works and the insulation and so on. And so this current legislation that's been put through that covers the private sector is really appropriate for an ageing population. It's something really positive this government's done, because it does recognise and benefit older people who are renting, who would otherwise be in very substandard housing without that legislation there. And those people who've got houses that aren't well insulated, from now on you will be able to have a conversation with your landlord, and you should be able to get that insulation put in. Your place should be much warmer if you're renting. And the penalties are stiff if the landlord doesn't comply. So I understand that rental property managers that are trying to manage the properties are actually giving quite stern information to the landlords and stating very clearly what the Act says and what their requirements are, what they need to do, and how it was meant to be done by the 1st of July, and so penalties are quite stiff. They're about $4,000 that can be sheeted home to the tenant if the landlord doesn't comply. So, you know, there is a lot of hope out there for the immediate situation, but in terms of actual stock, actual demand, as we have 50,000 people coming in to Auckland every year, the demand is on each property that's available is very, very high. And that's where, with low interest rates, where people can afford to get into the housing market and buy first homes, that will take some of the rental property off the market. And so that will bring about greater pressures. So we will need to see more social housing providers, whether they are state-funded or whether they are private community housing providers who can find funding. All of this is very much got to be looked at. And Kiwi Build and its rejig will have to answer somehow how it's going to better cater for the senior population, I believe. But we will see that when it's unveiled. At this point, I'd just like to take a break, and I've got a track piece in the neighbourhood by our local Nathan Haynes, and a great Kiwi artist. I hope you enjoy. Something was definitely there. It was a time.
just hope to stay alive.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Curry. I'm your presenter for Senior Focus today. And in this last part of the program, I just want to talk briefly about what's going on in terms of streets, because there's been some alarming accounts in the news of e-scooters and people even dying on these scooters. Whether they're on the road or on the footpath, they seem to have their problems. But largely, it's quite ironic, really, when you think about it, that people can produce a product, get it out on the road, and even though they've got notices on that say they need to be ridden with a helmet, there doesn't seem to be any leverage to do enforcement around this helmet wearing. They don't seem, even though some of them have lights, people don't seem to use those lights. And the third thing is that rules like not carrying two people on them or not carrying luggage or whatever also seem to be frequently ignored. And the upshot is that there's a lot of safety issues, nonetheless compounded by the actual design and the brakes locking up and people going over the handlebars and being quite severely injured. So the actual injury costs through ACC are not inconsiderable, falling, of course, on the taxpayer. Now, but sometimes having impacts locally on local economy, because they're affecting people being off work and affecting businesses and so on. It's quite extraordinary when you think that a vehicle car manufacturer couldn't put an unsafe car out on the road like that, and there would be some enforcement very quickly. Equally well, if you're designing footpaths and so on, you have to come up with certain specifications that meet design briefs. You can't just design it any old way you like. So it seems that this area of safety has had more than its fair share of issues, and a lot of them seem to be in a grey space because there are insufficient enforcement strategies around, and there are insufficient actual hard and fast rules. NZTA have the real leverage over the footpaths and over what goes on cycleways and what goes on the road and what is allowed on the footpath. And they have, because of the volume of new vehicles, whether they be e-cycles, e-scooters, whether they're privately owned or whether they're under a contract with being hired out, this introduces a whole raft of new phenomena for authorities to grapple with. And so far it seems like we've been a large guinea pig, because the Lime Scooter Company anyway has come in and set aside all sorts of requirements now that they are now bringing into view and saying, look, you know, we realise that we need to take control here more and we need to be more responsible company, and so we're going to do X, Y and Z. And, you know, they're actually stepping up because they don't want to be shut out of the market. But there's so many scooters that people are buying privately, and there's so many other options out there, and there are other companies out there. So it's a very complex and moving feast at the moment. Now, Grey Power has been very keen to see pedestrian safety prioritised. Auckland has the second most serious pedestrian injury and death rates in the world of any advanced city. So we are not a livable city in that sense. And I think for this reason alone, there's going to be more and more attention put on to what happens to pedestrians and how much pedestrian safety is prioritised. Then look at the local boards and you'll see that most of them in their transport work plan have got money set aside to improve pedestrian safety, whether it's the smart studs, those flashing lights that light up pedestrian crossings, that I think are really excellent because they draw attention to the fact the crossing's there. They're much more effective than what we used to have, lights on poles. They can be seen at all stages of the day and the night. And I think they draw people's eyes to the actual crossing, to where legs may appear at any time. So it is really good to see that these sorts of initiatives are coming in, and they're coming in locally in places where pedestrian safety stats are not good. So they're being targeted and they're being applied in appropriate ways. So have a look next time you're out and about at what's going on in your neighbourhood, where you see unsafe activity for pedestrians. Have a look and see if are there any initiatives that are new that are coming in. Talk to your local board members. This is an election coming up. It's an area where you can target your conversation, because I think that this power in the local boards to do things locally, and certainly there's been an extra amount of funding available from Auckland Transport to deal with these issues. So I really suggest that you do that. And there will be, in the future, discussions coming up. I will be presenting another seniors program here online. I won't be presenting for Auckland Grey Power, but I will be covering the election and interviewing people who are standing, and we'll get a cross-section of material available for you. Okay, and thank you for listening today. Bye.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus, and do note, Senior Focus is one word.